Welcome to the FT Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 12:37, and today is February 17th. Well, today was a reasonably quiet day on markets, but what we've had is some follow-through in the precious metal markets. Last week was the first time that we saw the ETF holdings, or total ETF holdings of gold, moving into positive territory. Now, that's a well-defined downtrend over the last 14 months. And acted really as a headwind for gold prices that resulted in a more than 20% decline last year. One aspect that we pointed out in the first week of January was that gold shares were the worst performing stock market sector on the S&P last year, and that they had at least found support and have so far been among the best performing stock market sectors this year. Today in comment of the day, I've posted a number of gold shares. Generally speaking, in this kind of environment where you see that where there have been a confluence of negative events that have acted against the sector, then relative strength leaders are generally leading for a reason. And those that are pushing up out of their respective ranges or breaking progressions of lower rally highs and pushing back above their 200-day moving averages generally are doing so for a reason. It generally means that they have probably written down most of their bad investments, or that with gold prices steadying above $1,200 and in fact above $1,300 as of Friday and improving on that performance in here today, up about $11, silver is also positive here. Well, all of that suggests that companies have probably a bit more visibility now on exactly what their cost of their total production costs are. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem that any two companies seem to define exactly what total costs are in the similar way. If gold companies could agree on what the definition of their total cost of production is, then that would probably endear them to investors that bit more. But in the meantime, we're seeing that a number of gold shares are breaking progressions of lower rally highs, some of them 2-year downtrends, others 3-year downtrends, and even more 4-year downtrends. So the fact that these are now being broken would suggest that the relative attraction of gold shares has been bolstered, and not least because they're at their cheapest level relative to gold since about 2001, in other words, since the beginning of the gold bull market began. So it's definitely an interesting sector. What we're also starting to see is that the resources sector more generally is starting to move in here. So if one goes through and clicks through uranium shares, then I would say about a third of them are either breaking their progression of lower rally highs and pushing out of their respective bases. There's been substantial consolidation in that part of the resources sector. I guess what we really need is a catalyst, probably in the form of the Japanese rebooting their nuclear sector. But it's difficult to argue with the price action, and what we do now seem to be seeing is that uranium shares are being really valued on their individual prospects rather than just the negativity that has prevailed for much of the last few years. If we had looked at the sector 6 months ago, you could still have said that just about everything was still going down. But it's probably worth looking at Areva, which is France's major uranium producer. It also constructs nuclear reactors and runs mining and reprocessing facilities. Well, it had deteriorated considerably over the last number of years, but has been trending higher now for the last 3 or 4 months. So there have been a number of questions from subscribers over the last few weeks about the uranium sector, and it would suggest that there is some interest returning in there. What we're also starting to see is that a number of the industrial metal miners, not really the iron ore miners, but the other industrial metals, such as copper, zinc, and nickel, where we've seen that prices have at least stabilized in terms of the metal prices. And again, it, for some of the same reasons that you're getting some interest in the precious metals, but that we're seeing that there has been some positivity in terms of the industrial metal pricing, particularly in things like nickel and zinc, and that is translating into some interest in the sector. I intend to review more of the mining sector in here this week. I think it's very much an opportune time to be doing that. Of course, what it also says about the wider market, and it was a reasonably positive day right across markets. The Nikkei was continues to hold here in the region of the 200-day moving average, and the yen is also in the region of the MA, and I guess that correlation is still very much in evidence, where investors are looking for a weaker yen to initiate long positions in the stock market. So it really is in the Bank of Japan's hands. The Australian market is worthy of mention. It's rallied very sharply over the last eight sessions. It's been up seven of the last eight sessions and rallying very positively from the region of the 200-day moving average. And if one looks at that over the last 1 year, then you can see that it's rallying a lot faster than it is deteriorating, which is generally a pretty positive sign. With regard to the ASX 200, the financials represent about 45% of the index. So there is a great reliance among retail investors on the higher yield option. But what we are starting to see now is that with some interest beginning to return to the resources sector, that that may start to outperform, at least in the short term, and that the focus on yield, which has really predominated over the last couple of years, as just about every other sector has disappointed, may begin to deteriorate, and that there is an opportunity potentially for the Australian market to get some of these growth type shares or cyclical shares starting to outperform in here. With the Chinese market, China is, in valuation terms, really quite cheap. It's really in need of some form of catalyst to give some visibility on exactly what's going to be done about the credit bubble. And I don't have any hesitation in calling it a bubble when the amount of credit outstanding exceeds the entire banking sectors of the US and Japan combined. What we've seen, though, with examples in the US and in Europe, is that even though the issues with the credit cycle or with the credit market can be identified, that they can persist for substantially longer than many people would like to admit, and not least when you have a government-controlled sector. And what we've also seen is that both the US and Europe and the UK have made abundant use of a weaker currency in order to support their banking sectors. So China has got more reserves than just about anyone else. They could employ those reserves and rearrange their banking sector in order to absorb a lot of the problems. But in the event that they fail to do all of that, well, then the renminbi is an obvious target and probably a last they have a wide number of solutions, but the renminbi is a possible solution in terms of a devaluation. Just about every other country has employed a weaker currency at one point or another. And the last time that China devalued its currency was in the early 1990s. What that was also a great example of is that when a currency devaluation comes in tandem with regulatory reform, then you get massive growth. The administrations in countries like Argentina could well take a page out of their book, that currency devaluation on its own is a temporary solution at best. But if you introduce the kind of regulatory reform in terms of improving governance, then you can have truly meaningful improvements in the economic prospects for the country. So it will be worth watching, considering just how much currency volatility that we've had, which countries grasp the nettle of regulatory reform, and those really will be the ones to keep an eye on. and not least as we head into the Party Congress in China and the election cycle in India in the next few months. In Europe, the majority of markets were relatively quiet, but the FTSE 100 was stronger, and also the pound was a bit firmer over the last few days, and it's back up to $1.67. The dollar was a little bit weaker in here against the majority of currencies, and again, that was also positive for the precious metal markets. And the oil market was reasonably quiet as well, with natural gas, though, remaining really quite firm. This very cold weather in much of the USA is certainly acting as a tailwind for natural gas in the short term. And I think with that, I will leave you for the afternoon and wish all the best to all of you.